What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you. So listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. It is 7 a.m. on a Tuesday. We know what that means. It's football season, playoffs, still going here in Houston. And joining us right now on the line, our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Make sure to check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, daily NFL podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Ross, it's great to talk to you. Yes, download it. I subscribe.
It's really good.
We subscribe. You should subscribe as well.
Greg Cassell on once a week, too. That's always really good info.
Good stuff. Good stuff. How you doing, Ross?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm excited for you guys. I think, I don't know. Obviously, I'm curious. What were your expectations going into that game? Because we didn't really talk about – you guys asked me what I thought. I didn't really ask what you thought going into that game Saturday.
Honestly, going back to, you know, whenever we realized the offense was struggling the way they were this year, my expectations or my hopes were all about the defense being able to create turnovers, especially at NRG Stadium, where they've had some really good performances versus quarterbacks who are much better than Justin Herbert. So it played out the way that we would have thought, except that also all of a sudden the Texans could run the ball in the second half. But I didn't expect any of the offensive part, Ross.
Yeah, Ross,
to answer your question.
Yeah, Seth picked a close, low-scoring loss. I picked a close, relatively low-scoring win. We both thought it would be a close game. I don't think neither of us expected the Texans to just dominate Justin Herbert the way that they, to that level. You know, like
Herbert had been careful with the football.
Yes.
So I thought, okay, maybe they'll pick him off a couple times, which would still double anything, any of the interceptions that Herbert had thrown. Yeah. So, yeah, I was pleasantly surprised, Ross.
Well, it's interesting because I was in the Baltimore Ravens press box, you know, watching the game, getting ready to be on the sideline for Ravens Steelers, and the first half was like, you know, if you didn't care who was winning or whatever, that was a rough watch.
Yes.
I mean, you know, neither offensive line could block the other team's defensive line. Neither team could get a whole lot going. Both quarterbacks threw, like, horrendous interceptions. I mean, really bad. And I thought, wow, this is bad ball. And then in the second half, it was more bad ball from the Chargers, and I think the Texans' defense deserves a lot of credit for that. And then I think the whole key, and this is my idea for the first play for the Texans in this game Saturday, you got to have the snap go right through C.J. Stroud.
Yes.
Like, go right through his hands, have it bounce on the ground, he'll pick it up. Because, like, it was like after that, he played awesome.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't get it. It was like they hadn't been able to do anything, and then the ball goes through his hands. He makes a special play. And after that, it's like he was on point. They could run the ball. The O-line started to block a little bit better. It was really funny to see that happen. I will say this. I said this right at the start of the Texans-Titans game in Week 18. If you guys remember, like, you know, right when we're on camera at the start of the game, you know, the Texans are absolutely elite at edge rusher and at corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives them a chance, I feel like, in every game. I mean, like, those are the positions that people care the most about. And it's not like they have one good guy at both those spots. They have two really good guys at both those spots that give them a chance. And you combine that with the fact that when you get Autry,
yes,
you get the one-on-one. I mean, Autry was killing the poor right guard, yeah, Salyer, for yeah, the Chargers. That was a key part of it as well. And so that's the formula. I mean, it's kind of how the first Chiefs game went a little bit as well. But they really need those guys to dominate. Like that is their chance, is if those guys can dominate what I would say are subpar tackles for the Chiefs, right? So if the edge guys can get there, if they can, you know, force Mahomes into a couple turnovers, that's the formula to get this win.
That's and Ross, I guess that's the big question is, all right, it looks like the Chiefs kind of started clicking there, really starting with the Texans game, and then since then you started to see the margins that that you might expect from a team that's won as many Super Bowls as they have. Aside from the pass rush on the defensive side of the ball, what can the Texans either replicate from this last game or exploit out of that Chiefs defense, which also started to look more like the quintessential Chiefs defense?
Yeah, and I think part of that is because they're getting healthier, you know, and man, goodness knows those guys are rested. I mean, that's the other part of this thing is, and you can say this about any team in any game, but it feels especially important that the Texans get off to a fast start. A lot of different reasons, right? Like, number one, to try to take the Chiefs crowd out of it a little bit. But also, you know, there's a very real chance that the Chiefs are rusty. I mean, it's one thing to take a week off, maybe even two. These guys haven't played in like 24 days. I mean, it has been a long time since these guys played football on Christmas Day. Think about that. Think about, like, if the Texans hadn't played since Christmas Day. That's the last time the Chiefs guys have played. And so I would expect there to be some rustiness from the Chiefs. I think the Texans need to capitalize, right? Texans have some momentum. They finished the second half strong against the Chargers. They're feeling like, hey, we're as good as anybody. We can do some damage here. I think they really need to get off to a fast start and take advantage of what should be a little bit of a rusty Chiefs. I mean, that's a long time to not play in a game and have the speed of the game. I don't know what Andy Reid did to try to make sure those guys are still ready to roll, but you would think if there's an advantage for the Texans, it would be early in the game, and then you think the Chiefs' advantage would be, you know, as the game goes with the Texans being a little bit more worn down, although they were even able to rest, you know, a lot of their guys for most of the game against the Titans week 18.
Ross, the other, you know, the big matchup this week, obviously, is the Bills at the Ravens. And I'm just trying to figure out exactly how you beat the Ravens if they keep playing the way they've been playing. What's the secret sauce?
Well, I think two things. One is you got to be able to score with them. And I think you can do that. I mean, you know, Russell Wilson and the Steelers actually moved the ball pretty darn well in the second half through the air against the Ravens. You know, I think the rookie corner, Wiggins, is good. The guy on the other side, Stevens, that's the guy that people have kind of been picking on. So, I mean, the easy answer offensively is you need Josh Allen to be Superman, which he can be, right? Like, he can be that guy that kind of takes them on his back, throwing and running. I mean, you're going to see a lot of quarterback run Sunday night because it's do or die. Defensively, you know, I'm sort of the mindset, especially without Zay Flowers, and we'll see whether or not he can play, but even if he does play, he's clearly not going to be 100%. I kind of feel like you gotta hope Lamar Jackson has like a bad shooting night, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm of the mindset you absolutely sell out to stop the run and to get pressure on Lamar, and you play man-to-man with a single high safety and you take your chances about getting beat deep, right? Like if Lamar is going to chuck it deep to Bateman or one of the other guys, and they're going to beat your corner on a deep shot, I think you live with that. I think that's your best chance to win, is you try to get pressure on Lamar, you try to get in his face, you're physical with the receivers, make him and them convert the deep passes down the field, deep contested catches down the field. Because if you just sit there, he's eventually going to pick you apart. Yeah. And I was like borderline, and Seth, it must have driven you nuts. I was like borderline embarrassed for the Steelers on Saturday. I mean, the Ravens had 250-some yards rushing with 6 minutes left in the third quarter of that game, a game in which the Ravens didn't have the only Pro Bowl receiver in franchise history.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how you let your – you know what's get run over by Derrick Henry and the Ravens is beyond me. Like that's,
Ross,
that's
honestly,
the only thing that can't happen.
I get so much sympathetic stress for defenses when they face the Ravens because, you know, I mean, going back to the veer option days back in the day, you get put in that bind, you know, when you're a defensive end, when you're a linebacker, and you've got a split second to make the decision on whether to go after Lamar Jackson or Derrick Henry or stay in pass coverage. It just sucks. I mean, there's parts of it where, you know, the Texans last year in the playoffs, in the first half, they were way more aggressive. They blitzed way more than they had all season long. And it was effective. But in the second half, you saw, oh, this is a different Lamar Jackson who can kind of take what the defense is giving him. And he diced them up with it, and he ran when there were opportunities to run, and he's operating at a higher level right now. Yeah, I wasn't as embarrassed for them as much as I felt the crunch of what a nightmare it is playing that offense.
Understood, but it was like there were guys that it did not seem like wanted to be out there and be physical.
It turns your brain into mush. That's what it does. It castrates you too. They take care of all of your vital organs, your brain and both testicles.
Yeah, but there's videos out there of guys that I thought, you know, the effort was disappointing by some guys. I thought the lack of physicality was disappointing. And I know there are certain plays where they put you in a bind. But listen, if they're running the zone read, the Steelers were that they had the edge guy closing on the running back, which I thought was the right call. But then you have to have the linebacker scraping over the top. I mean, there were just things that happened in that game that I thought were very disappointing.
Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, joining us. Hey, Ross, before we cut you loose, the big topic league-wide today seems to be Jerry Jones talking to Deion Sanders about the Cowboys head coaching job. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think Deion Sanders would be a good hire for the Dallas Cowboys?
Well, I'm not surprised at all. I posted that as soon as I heard the Mike McCarthy news. I posted at Ross Tucker NFL, Dallas Cowboys head coach Deion Sanders, question mark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know when it switched or when it happened, but on some level, it just feels to me in recent years like the Cowboys have decided winning financially is more important than winning on the field. And because there's not a lot of explanation for how long they wait to do the deals with CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott, there's not a lot of explanation to have Mike McCarthy. You know, you wait a full week. Now they can't even interview guys like Aaron Glenn and Ben Johnson because you had to interview the guys on a bye week during their bye week. I mean, now they have to wait till the end. I mean, they do things that seem like the priority is the attention and right or wrong, right?
Yeah.
I think that seems like it's the priority. And if you're a Cowboys fan that wants to see them in meaningful games and conference championship games and Super Bowl, it's wrong and has been wrong for a long time.
Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, joining us. Hey, Ross, you're on the game this weekend, right, for Westwood One, the Texans and the Chiefs?
That is right. Unfortunately, nobody in your area would be able to hear it,
right?
Because you guys will obviously have Mark and Andre Ware. But yeah, it'll be me and Kevin Harlan in the booth in Kansas City. Going to be electric.
Yeah, that's a dream team right there, man. That's a good pairing, you and Kevin Harlan. That'll be a fun listen for those outside of Houston, as you point out. Hey, Ross, we always appreciate the time, man. Make sure that you download and check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, daily NFL podcast, on the Odyssey app or wherever it is you get your podcast. Ross, safe travels and bring some good luck to the Texans, man.
You know what? I will try, because I want a close, competitive game. Just real quick, watching that first matchup, it was pretty competitive,
yeah.
I thought. You know, it felt like until the Tank Dell injury, you know, that the Texans – I don't think the Texans are going to be afraid. I'm really looking forward to it. I think the Texans are going to surprise some people. I'm not saying they're going to necessarily win the game, but I think that they can get it till the end where – 99.5% of the time, Mahomes makes those three plays, so the Chiefs win by three. So we'll see if that's what happens.
Yeah, no doubt. An 8-point spread's a big number, man. We'll see what happens. Ross Tucker joining us here on his Tuesday visit. Hey, Ross, we appreciate it, man. Safe travels.
All right, see you guys.
All right, take it easy, Ross Tucker.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that I guess, because the narratives are so easy with the Chiefs, that, okay, well, yeah, you know, they're going to do this, they're going to do that, they're going to struggle in the regular season, and then they're going to turn it on the postseason. And it's all justified. They do it.
They do it every year.
This year, throw out the box scores. They won games in the fourth quarter. It took a little bit of luck, but it's the old classic, part of being lucky is being in position to take advantage of lucky situations.
And being comfortable in those situations.
Right, and being comfortable, like the Astros in the playoffs,
yes.
Year after year after year. And we saw it with the Texans played a competitive game with the Chiefs right up until the Texans fell apart in the fourth quarter. And teams like the Chiefs don't fall apart in the fourth quarter. So, yeah, if there are lucky bounces of the ball, the Chiefs are there to take advantage of it, and they know what to do with it. But I think the notion that somehow the Chiefs just bludgeoned the Texans to death in the first game, which was in Kansas City, I think you're not paying close enough attention just to casually dismiss it like that.
If you watched,
it was a competitive game.
It was a competitive game. If all you did was turn the game on with 11 minutes to go and you didn't look at the scoreboard, you would have thought the Texans got blown out in that game, because for the last 11 or 12 minutes of that game,
right,
the Chiefs had the ball for 10 and a half of those minutes.
Right.
They just choked the Texans out in the fourth quarter. But yeah, it is one of those things. You think, like, man, if Tank doesn't get hurt on that play, you know, if it's just a touchdown, if Kaimi makes the extra point, like, that's where you started to feel the game roll downhill a little bit. Was like, man, you sat there for 20 minutes watching one of your best players get put in an ambulance on the field. You're looking at your quarterback who's bawling his eyes out watching this thing, and you finally get reset, you finally line up for the extra point, and Kaimi shanks the thing.
As far as Ross was talking about with the Steelers defense, I guess as a defensive player, the way I can empathize with it is that, yes, you'd love to see that your guys are fighting like crazy and everything, and lots of guys will fight like crazy no matter what the circumstances are, but there's a certain element of playing against a team like the Ravens where it's the same way it is with animals when you train them. It's learned helplessness. Like, the reason that, if you train a dog really well, he's not going to even try to leave the property, even when he's not wearing a leash, because he's learned to be helpless.
Yeah.
All those things. And there's almost that it's a team like the Ravens, it breaks you like you're a horse. It's because everything Ross was talking about, like, okay, hey, if you're gonna just have the defensive ends crash down and play the run, then the linebackers have to scrape over the top. Problem is, when they do that, Lamar Jackson is good enough to kill you through the air if you make the wrong decision. And it emasculating is, I think, the right word. It kind of just, it takes the testosterone out of you. You feel like you're stuck in this bind, because they're really, really good at putting defenses in a bind. And it's stressful as hell to watch. I hate it. I hate it. The Texans players, because I knew a lot of people after the Texans played the Ravens, They were angry. I saw people accusing Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter of being selfish and only playing for the sack or only doing this or that. Like, no, part of it was there's times where you say, look, no, on this play, you're going to play the quarterback no matter what. But that puts a lot of stress on everybody on the inside, on the defensive tackles and the linebackers and everything else. And if you guess wrong, it just at some point it gets you. Which is a really long-winded way of saying the Ravens' offense is really good because they can threaten you in so many different ways that it makes defenses think, and once you're thinking, you're screwed.
Yeah, did you – I just sent it to Ben to add to the Pettycast at 8 o'clock, but did you see Herb Street just eviscerate the Steelers during that game when they came up to the booth for a hit?
No, like, I didn't.
It was during the third quarter. Like, it was – you know, Herb Street – like Herb Street is stronger on college than he is on pro. I just think overall, I think he's good on both. He's really talented, obviously. But like this was as forceful an opinion as I've ever heard from Herb Street, just basically questioning the manhood and the want to of the Steelers. It was, and especially because it was the Steelers who would be way down the bottom of the list of NFL teams you think would, like, I'm not even saying allow the yards, but just like the optics of them just like, giving
like
you're
up just
almost.
Laying down.
Yeah.
And especially, I mean, imagine if Tomlin didn't have the track record of toughness and success that he's had, where, those teams fight, no matter what. They make the playoffs in years when you didn't think they had any chance at all of making the playoffs. To lose five straight like that, it's a weird place for the Steelers to be.
Oh,
right
five,
now.
Yeah, five straight playoff games. Yeah.
No. Five losses in a row
in the regular season. At the end of the season.
Yeah, they've lost five straight times.
Yeah.
They haven't won since what, November?
Yeah,
early December. It's a lot of losses.
I don't think they've won since the game I went to in early during the bye week.
Lucky charm.
I was.
You're their little troll doll.
Yeah, they beat
the
Browns.
They need to put you in the corner of the end zone.
They needed me to beat the Browns. Yeah.
Need you to be a pylon.
Yeah, I don't want any of that. But they haven't won a playoff game in forever, too. Like, I was reading Mike Sando's pick six column this week. The lead in there is about Tomlin and the Steelers and how that's the biggest conundrum of this coaching carousel, because reportedly there's teams that are thinking of trying to trade for Mike Tomlin and that he might be available because the Steelers might have reached their breaking point with, like, he sure does raise the floor for you, but he sure does bring the ceiling down as well, or at least that's the perception. You know, like, hey, man, that you're a Steeler fan. You are guaranteed to be playing important games in December and early January. You're also guaranteed to lose important games in the middle of January.
and we'll get back to Houston stuff in a minute here, but look, if the Texans pull off this upset, you're likely going to be playing the Ravens, you will be either playing the Ravens or the Bills, but likely the Ravens, in my opinion. Okay, this is how bad the turn was, though. Just to lay it out very simply, November 10th, Steelers beat the Commanders. November 17th, Steelers beat the Ravens. November 21st, Steelers lose to the Browns.
Yeah.
But hey, they rebound. The next week they beat the Bengals. Then they lose to the Browns. They beat the Browns. They beat the Browns. But then, starting on December 15th, they lose to the Eagles. They lose to the Ravens.
Yep.
They lose to the Chiefs.
Yep.
They lose to the Bengals. Yeah. And then they lose to the Ravens, which, I mean, some of those are quality teams, obviously. But they've just lost five. And it looked worse with each successive week.
Yeah, I think we all knew with the Steelers that there was that stretch of schedule coming. It got brought up every time there was a conversation about, are the Steelers a real Super Bowl contender? Because it got brought up all the time on the debate shows and whatnot. Everybody brought up those last four games that you talked about at the end of the year. I just don't think, to your point, Seth, I don't think anybody thought it would look that bad. I think people thought they'll win one of these, right? You know, you win one, and if it's the right one and you actually beat the Ravens, you win the division. You know,
the big thing about the Steelers defense too is it's the highest paid unit in the league. It's the highest paid defense in the league. So the letdown is extreme.
Yeah.
If you start talking about like want to and how hard guys are trying and everything else like that, it's bad juju up there in Pittsburgh right now.
The biggest thing for them right now, and it's been this way ever since Ben Roethlisberger started getting injured and wasn't the same Ben Roethlisberger, is they're having a really hard time getting a quarterback. You know, they tried it with Kenny Pickett. and it didn't work out.
I thought they were the most brilliant team in the league for trading for Justin Fields. How'd that work out? Is that
he's a hell of a backup?
I didn't get to watch the entire Steelers. I didn't get to watch much of the second half at all. Justin Fields didn't come in and mount a startling comeback.
Not that I saw.
Just checking because I just remember all the gushing praise of them for being so brilliant. And it wasn't a dumb move. They didn't have to give up anything to get him, but they acted like it was the coup of the century that they got a bust on their team.
Omar Khan's playing chess compared to everybody else because they traded for Justin Fields. And they got Russell Wilson for $1 million, you know?
The other annoying thing about that was that the way it was framed by the GM of the Bears, what's his face?
Ryan Poles. Yeah,
Ryan Poles managed to put the propaganda out there that he could have gotten more for Justin Fields, but he wanted to do him a solid.
Yeah, wanted to go to Pittsburgh.
Like, no, the Steelers were able to get him at that price because nobody was offering anything for Justin Fields.
Yeah,
idiots.
Honestly, like that to me makes Ryan Poles look worse. If I'm the Bears, I'm like, okay, you're doing a player a solid instead of doing what's best for the Bears.
Yeah, are we gonna have a nice let's all gather around and sing Kumbaya? Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah, man, it's a business. I liked Ross bringing up the Xavier Hutchinson, CJ Stroud play. Like, it's cool to see people outside of Houston notice. Like, and if anybody would notice that, it would be Ross, who I feel like has 48 hours in his 24-hour days to watch all these football games.
Well, no, the great thing about that fumble turned deep strike to Xavier Hutchinson, it's that it does remind me of a few weeks ago. Jared Goff had the play where they pretended that he stumbled because what it does is it busts up the rhythm of the play, and in the defensive backfield it screws up their eye discipline, and the exact same thing happened with the Chargers, where the Chargers, you see, as a defensive back, you see what's going on in the defensive backfield. You start getting lulled into, like, okay, wait, there's a busted play. And it screws up the timing a little bit. And when you watch the Chargers' defensive backs, they keep their shell, but almost too much. Because I think there's a little bit of that, like, oh, crap, busted play. Oh, wait. Okay, no, it's still a pass play. And the safety rolls over with CJ, even though there's no actual threat underneath. And it allows Xavier Hutchinson to just kind of wander and meander over there into the middle of the field.
Wide open.
So it wasn't like a complete breakdown in discipline or anything, but it was enough that it made everything askew. So, yes, this week I would like there to be a planned fumble or botched snap.
Yeah. Ben Johnson would do it. Come on, Bobby.
The one I thought of and I told you was that it reminds me of when a punt returner muffs a punt.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, because it just screws up the angles,
all the lanes and
everything else like that. Yeah. So I went in a little bit of a rabbit hole yesterday trying to find an example of it. And the Deshaun Jackson one versus the Giants
from
2010 came up. Remember, he muffed the punt and then ends up taking it to the house?
Yep, I do. I do remember that. Hey, let's relive it. You can never really relive the good stuff too many times. Here was the C.J. Stroud fumble hutch play.
Stroud calls for the ball. And the ball goes through Stroud. He picks it up. Scrambles out to the right side. Can he get rid of it? Airs it out downfield and caught at the 45-yard line and taken to the 50-yard line. X marks the spot. An amazing play for the Texans on third and long.
That flipped the game, man. C.J. Stroud's passer rating before that, 44.53. C.J. Stroud's passer rating after that play, 128.39. 10.3 yards per attempt. Not including that play, like 10.3 yards per attempt after that play.
This is where I hope that, I think with CJ and, you know, Bobby Slowick obviously is a huge part of all of this entire season, the way it's gone for the offense. You know, it's not a separate topic, but like we'll set that part of it aside for a second. I think with CJ, there's a little bit of, in the early part of a learning curve for a quarterback or anybody, like whenever you're learning any skill, It's the curse of the conscientious, which is that the guys that are trying really hard to do everything the right way and have like a very high standard for themselves, they're not going to necessarily, it's not going to be a smooth path for them, because they're working so much on doing things the right way that sometimes it starts to get in the way of just letting things flow, and it's a really hard balance to find. But I think after that play, there was a little bit of CJ that just started playing football. and let the game come to him. And part of that was him taking the easy money and running when the opportunities were there. Like, that's a little bit of, man, like, because you're, with quarterbacks especially, you're trying to do the right things. You're trying to be a pocket passer. You don't want to take the easy path. That's an awesome attitude to have. But sometimes just take the easy path.
Yeah.
And let the game come to you and let things just happen. You know, but God, it's such a, it's like anybody listening right now has struggled with this in life. Finding that balance of when to let it go and when to rein things in.
Sure.
It's really, really, it's really hard, especially when 320-pound men are trying to pick you up and throw you on the ground.
Yeah, no, Nick.
And have done it successfully at times this year.
Yeah, for sure. No, when we asked Nick last week about, do you think C.J. Stroud's a better quarterback now than he was this time a year ago, and he said, man, it's the hardest position to play in all of team sports, to your point. Now, here was Nick on Texans All Access. I think this interview runs today. Is it tomorrow? Tomorrow, Ben? Okay,
it's
runs
on YouTube already.
It's on YouTube. So, yeah, no, I was going to say it's on YouTube, but it runs on the radio. It runs on Wednesday. A good conversation, as always. John and Mark do a great job with both him and D'Amico. This was Caserio talking about that scintillating, exciting play we just saw to Hutchinson. Here was Nick Caserio on that play.
Yeah, you never really know what play is going to kind of change the complexion of the game there a little bit. Even that start of that drive, we had the ball on the one. Yeah. We're actually able to get the ball off of the goal line there a little bit. You know, we were backed up. The first half really didn't have control of field position. It seems like we were always playing on a short field. Mm-hmm. And then we were able to get that conversion there. And even if the snap wasn't dropped, you look at the play and the concept, there was going to be some space probably for the in cut there. Now, the way the play materialized, I don't think anybody drew that up on a paper, but sometimes players just have to make plays. Seemingly, Hutch makes a play like that during the course of the year. Did against Green Bay, where he came up with a third down conversion. When he gets an opportunity, they're limited, but he maximizes those and capitalizes them. And CJ kind of kept his composure and was able to make a good play while on the move.
Now, not that I expect Nick to be over the moon about a play like that, like Vandy was calling it. Or even like D'Amico, I think, does get pumped up. Certainly on the sidelines, he did. And I think even like Nick, I need Nick to describe, like, do a narration of like movie scenes that are like over the top, like, or even like Game of Thrones. Like, Nick, I need your commentary on the Battle of the Bastards, where Jon Snow is standing there with a sword and he's got 1,000 soldiers charging at him and somehow finds a way to win that thing. And he's like, you know, Jon Snow's a good player. He's got really good balance, good contact balance. You can see that here as he's getting mobbed by 20 soldiers from the opposite side. And I think he probably would have won this anyways. You know, we had a good plan in place to win the Battle of the Bastards. But to see Jon come out, you know, Jon's a good player. He's a really good player. And, you know, it's good to live and fight another day.
So, you know, Jesus, he carried the cross through Jerusalem, and then he was up on the cross for a while. He died, and then 3 days later, there he was.
He
and,
rose.
You know, and then we moved on, and they read the Bible.
Jesus is a good player. He's a, you know, he's a good player, makes good plays.
Yes, yeah.
that was a turning point in the game. Though,
you know, the Germans were in France, and, you know, basically we sent a bunch of Americans over there, and, you know, we went across the English Channel, and then we won the war.
Darth Vader, you know, jumped on the rebel ship, and here you see him here, you know, he's slicing down 10 soldiers at a time with his lightsaber. He's always had really good lightsaber skills, good contact balance, good center of gravity here. Vader's been a good player for a long time.
You know, Luke Skywalker's a guy who struggled with his emotions at times, you know, and we're trying to work through that and just understand that the Force is the way. But then, you know, he found out that Darth Vader was his father and he lost his hand, and we just got to get back up and get back at it.
We're really proud of where Luke is, how far Luke has come as a player, you know, early in his career.
Yeah, it's a struggle for a young player to learn how to rein in your emotions.
Had his hand chopped off by his dad, you know.
Being a Jedi is the hardest position in the universe.
It's, I will say this, it's the hardest position in all of cinematography, being a Jedi.
You know, I think people don't really talk about or credit enough really just how much Chewbacca meant. Kind of the unsung hero in that. A lot of people think, a lot of people thought Chewbacca was dumb just because they couldn't understand his grunts and such, but he's actually really, really one of the most intelligent. What was he? What could it?
He was a Wookiee,
Yeah, really one of the more intelligent Wookiees we've ever had,
out there. You know? Not to talk about a group of people like that, you know, or anything.
There's a lot of, you know, a
not
lot
to
of people
profile
have opinions about
Wookiees.
A Wookiees, Wookiees. Yeah. You know, which, frankly, it's BS.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I'll get elevated about it.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah, a lot of people thought, like, oh, This
it's Chewy.
Wait, what kind of creature is he?
He's a Wookiee.
A Wookiee.
Yeah.
It's such a dumb name. It's like, so, you want to hear a lot of people, I'll be honest with you, a lot of people thought this Wookiee couldn't do the job, you know, and it's BS.
Right.
Because, you know, we'll take any Wookiee on our team.
Absolutely.
What we care about is not, we don't care about the various species you've wiped out before. When you enter this building, it's a clean slate.
Yes.
And we're going to find out what a Wookiee can do.
We expect him to be Wookiee of the Year next year. Yeah. Absolutely. Do you know the dumbest thing about the word Wookiee? It's spelled with two E's. It's W-O-O-K-I-E-E. Spelled like rookie, but with another E at the end of it.
With an extra E.
Extra E, yeah, yeah.
Trying a little too hard there.
George Lucas. Yeah, what the hell? Am I right about that, Ben? Is that how it's spelled?
You're right.
Yeah,
My favorite thing is their Wikipedia is called Wookiepedia.
Wookiepedia, yes. Yes, that's right. That's right. That's good stuff. A lot of texters, Seth, weighing in on hatred for the Chiefs, high or low hatred, and a point made by a texter that I think is a good one. We tried to make the comparison of where are they on the hate scale compared to the Patriots dynasty right now.
Yeah.
I think the pending three-peat.
Maybe there are hatred outside of Houston for the Astros.
Yeah.
I don't feel like there's as much venom for the Chiefs as there is for the Astros.
I don't either. Yeah, no,
I don't imagine the difference there.
Why is that? Someone points out on the text page that everyone loves Andy Reid, which means the Chiefs will never be as hated as the New England Patriots.
It's hard to hate Andy Reid. Really, really,
some
really
Larusky
hard to hate.
Do.
Yeah, especially, yeah, these guys. That's like with Jim Harbaugh. Like, Jim Harbaugh's quirkiness, like, there are parts of it that used to annoy me, but now he's at an age where you're just kind of like, what a lovable old weirdo.
Yeah.
And Reid's never been detestable. He's always been, you know, because it's funny, though, too, because he's widely regarded as one of the toughest coaches to play for in the NFL. And which goes back to what I've told you forever, is it's not about yelling and screaming that makes you a tough coach. It's how high is the standard, and do you hold guys to it?
Yep.
And then they practice really physically and tough. They have like really tough training camps by modern standards. But he's just so, his demeanor and his appearance and everything is just like, oh, he's a lovable old fat guy.
That's right. Yay. That's right. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Big thanks to Ross Tucker for joining us on the show. Yeah, subscribe and download to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. All right, hypothetical for the next segment. The Texans have a bunch of really good players on injured reserve right now. If you could pick one to bring back for the postseason, you get a magic potion to make them fully healthy. I put up a poll about this. I'm a little surprised, slightly surprised, at the results of the poll I put up about this yesterday. But we'll tell you what the results are. We'll get your thoughts on it. 713-572-4610. See what Seth has to say as well. We'll do that next.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
From the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you, Payne and Pendergast. People enjoyed that last segment. We appreciate the feedback. We'll read some of the text. 713-572-4610. People like no drama, Nick.
Yeah, that's a fun little thing. We'll have to make that a recurring theme. Speaking of which, I'm trying to figure out which Pope Zaza hat to buy here.
Is that what you've been doing? You've looked so intense the last couple breaks.
I'm starting to get there's some nice Pope hats out there, but I got to find one that doesn't have a cross on it. I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be overtly sacrilegious here. So I'm just trying to get a Pope hat. I just want to call myself the Pope.
We did just do No Drama Nick describing Jesus walking through, you know.
I feel like I can get away with, like, Catholics have a pretty good sense of humor about mm-hmm. things with stuff like this. If I put a cross on it then I'm opening it up to anybody and everybody. We have one listener who's stopped listening to the show because I would reference the football gods from time to time.
Yeah, that's...
And I thought he was joking, but he was definitely like, I ended up texting with this guy. And he says that he's evangelical, and his pastor, because I told him, I was like, but you should talk to your pastor about this, because I really feel like you're taking this a little too literally.
Yeah.
It's very much a metaphor for, like, fate or chance or whatever it might be. And he said, no, I can't talk to my pastor about it, because my pastor doesn't think we should even be watching football. Okay. So
that's a little extreme.
I'm like, he allows you to have a smartphone? Like, I just said,
no kidding.
Yeah,
no kidding.
So there are at least some people who very seriously don't like it when I say football gods.
Yes,
which I can't stop doing it because it's no, it's not because it's stupid.
Right.
So yeah, but I feel bad that I lost that listener.
Okay. Well, I mean,
sorry, Sean. I took him away from you.
Look, if that guy was going to find something with this show eventually anyways is how I feel about it. Like,
yeah. I think I made a compromise with him, actually, if I remember properly.
Okay,
I'm going to talk about baseball gods, but not football gods.
For those wondering why Seth is looking for a Pope hat, we got a little Pope Zaza thing I think we're planning for later this week, right?
Yeah.
On the show, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, my alter ego, Pope Zaza, which mm-hmm. we've never fully really developed. I need to just start. I need to resurrect that, so to speak.
All right, let me. Good job. All right, this was the question on the poll, and I'm assuming you've not looked at the results because you like to not look at the results of these
things.
You like to guess. Pender poll for Texan fans. If you could bring back one of these four injured players healthy for the rest of the postseason, who would it be? Jalen Petrie, Jimmy Ward, Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs.
This is a tough one.
Who would you pick, and who do you think the people picked?
Oh, boy, this is tough. And, you know, in the heat of the moment here, the defense just played as well as they did. But versus, you know, not the best receiving core and not the top five quarterback necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm tempted to say Jalen Petrie, though, because you're going to face tougher offenses very soon. Or tougher quarterbacks.
So that would be who you would pick.
No, because Tank Dell also. But likewise, I would say Tank Dell, especially given the fact that in the Chiefs game especially, he had started to find his rhythm. They were feeding him the ball heavily. I would say Tank Dell, and I think Tank Dell is what everybody else would say.
Tank Dell is not what everybody else says. I'm shocked by this. I'm shocked. Yeah. You didn't even bring up the name of the runaway winner of this poll. 50.7%. He's got an actual majority in this poll, 50.7%. Tank is number two, 28.9%, which I think speaks to the need being more on offense than it is on defense. But, man, Jimmy Ward got 1%, so he's way back. Jalen Petrie got 19.4%. He finished third. It is fun to think of adding Jalen Petrie back into this mix with the way the rest of the secondary is playing right now and what that – what that might look like. But I would have said Tank. I'm with you. I think they need the element that Tank was starting to bring more so than Stephon Diggs.
I think with Stephon, well, and partly too is that, you know, Stephon was really good at the short and intermediate stuff. And in his absence, it was a matter of trying to figure out exactly how to replicate that. And Tank wasn't stepping in and taking over that role for Stephon Diggs the way we thought. I guess for me, maybe I'm a little too much influenced by that Chiefs game.
Maybe.
And what it looked like before he was injured. Yeah. Because I did think that if you could start to get that, because they were getting Tank Dell over the middle. They were starting to do some of the crossing routes and things that you wondered, why are they not doing more of this? And partly is on just Tank Dell learning how to play receiver in the NFL as a smaller guy. It felt like it had started to click.
Yes.
And, man, and for the long term, that's what I would want to be. So, but I am torn because Stephon feels like such a distant memory at this point.
It doesn't feel real. It really feels like a fever dream.
Yeah, it feels like it felt like it was something that happened in 2023 or something.
Yeah.
I think that people might be correct on this. As far as just being able to plug in and get something out of him and have it be consistent week to week, Stephon's probably the right
choice. Especially when you think of just sheer reputation. I mean, Stephon Diggs is a multi-time Pro Bowler and a recent former All-Pro. And again, it's fully healthy you're getting these guys. So it's not after their rehabbing of their injury or anything like that. In the hypothetical, you're getting them fully healthy. Boy, we're getting a lot of texts. People really enjoyed us doing No Nonsense Nick. Here was, just to reset, what set off Seth and I doing No Nonsense Nick was Nick Caserio being asked about the Xavier Hutchinson catch after C.J. Stroud fumbled the snap. He was asked about it by John and Mark on Texans All Access.
Yeah, you never really know what play is going to kind of change the complexion of the game there a little bit. Even that start of that drive, we had the ball on the one. Yeah. We're actually able to get the ball off of the goal line there a little bit. You know, we were backed up. The first half really didn't have control of field position. It seems like we were always playing on a short field. Mm-hmm. And then we were able to get that conversion there. And even if the snap wasn't dropped, you look at the play and the concept, there was going to be some space probably for the in cut there. Now, the way the play materialized, I don't think anybody drew that up on a paper, but sometimes players just have to make plays. Seemingly, Hutch makes a play like that during the course of the year. Did against Green Bay, where he came up with a third down conversion. When he gets an opportunity, they're limited, but he maximizes those and capitalizes them, and CJ kind of kept his composure and was able to make a good play while on a move.
So Nick took the most exciting play of the season, maybe the most important play of the season, one that Vandermeer screamed, X marks the spot at the end of it. And he takes it, no nonsense, purely descriptive, like, wow, that play sounds almost boring right now. And so Seth and I were describing various historical things that had happened, you know, winnings of wars or movie scenes, battle scenes described by Nick. The texts are hilarious. This is a text message. This is from 6561. You know, not enough people give Han Solo credit. I mean, he's actually playing out of position. His normal position is not the hero. He's more the, you know, the guy that doesn't really believe in anything. So for him to step up and become, you know, the hero in the story is completely a different position, and you've got to give Han Solo credit.
You do. You have to give him a lot of credit.
Oh,
you know?
My God. He's
Luke Skywalker, you know, he's you know, young players go through their ups and downs, their peaks and the valleys, but, you know, by the time the Empire had started to build the second Death Star, we felt like Luke had really made a lot of progress, made a lot of strides. You know, and you never know until they try to come back. And there's still, look, these guys have a lot of temptations from all over. You know, and this social media has changed things. And they, like, you know, did Luke think about maybe going to the dark side? I don't know, but it's not a concern anymore.
No, it says a lot about him that he didn't give in to joining his father of all people.
Well, you talk about veteran leadership, you know, Lando Calrissian, you know, really got selfless, willing to do whatever it took, you know, and it just, he, you know, he's going to, you know, sometimes you can't replace that veteran experience.
Great teammate, great guy in the locker room, great guy in the Cloud City, other than, you know, diming out Han and giving him to Darth Vader. After that, he really made up for that by going and finding Han and unfreezing him out of the carbonite. That was a good job by Lando Calrissian. Aaron Raybould poked his head in, one of our engineers up here, and he said, I'm shocked that you guys didn't do the end of Godfather 1, where Michael takes out all the family business. Like, you know, we knew Michael had a lot. You know, Michael was eventually going to be the leader of the family, and to see him take out Bozzini and Tattaglia and the other five families, you know, it was it was good to see him finally cash in on that potential. And you got to give Michael a lot of credit. Like, he's relentless when it comes to killing off the other five families, the other four families.
That was good. Yeah, it was good. Yep. It was good. But we got a lot of work to do. You know, you just gotta move on to the next one. You gotta move on to the next movie. Don't cast your daughter in it, you dumbass.
We're kidding. Oh God.
Oh, that was three.
That was three.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot of Wookiee texts. After 18 games, he's no longer a Wookiee. So dumb. That's so stupid.
There's a lot of disadvantages to, you know, a lot of people say you can't have a 7'6" Wookiee, too tall. They can get up underneath your pads. And but you know, we evaluate each guy based on his own merits.
We do, and we try to put him in position to be successful. To do if they've one thing they do well.
Yeah.
Put them in position. Yeah.
But the big thing with a lot of these Wookiees, they come in, they don't understand. You got to communicate. And it's a matter of, like, you got to really be sure you communicate well. And it was a challenge for this Wookiee.
All right. Keep texting in. We got a little petty. Are you ready for the petty cast? Are you ready to get petty?
Born ready.
Yeah. You're ready. I'm petty. Seth's petty. You're all going to be petty. Text in your petties. We do the petty cast Tuesday, 8 o'clock every week. The biggest examples of pettiness either on this show or around the sports world, and that is coming up next.